Hi, McCartney fans, and welcome to episode 147 of Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. We are a Paul McCartney talk show mainly dealing with the solo career of Paul McCartney. I'm one of your two co-hosts, Tom Hunyadi, and you may also know me for my other show, Talk More Talk, a solo Beatles video cast, where myself, Ken Michaels, me, Mr. Mayo, and the Queen, Kittle Two, will talk all things solo Beatles, so please check that out if you haven't. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, my backers traveler, Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on?
Good evening, my friend. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Still enjoying that lyrics book, But today, yes, today we've got our buddy Lauren Stuber, LJ, back on the show to talk about his experience on the 79 UK tour. Unfortunately, I'm six then, and, in Michigan, so, obviously I wasn't there. Probably got some fans that are a little older and have experienced it then, but...
Hey, a good friend of mine went to one of these shows and said it was
Oh, he did?
He went to the Liverpool show, yep.
Okay, cool.
He went to the Liverpool show, and he said it was absolutely awesome. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what we can, hear from LJ about this this short but awesome tour.
Yeah, it was very short. It's what 19 dates or something like that? 10 cities?
That's it. It was very, very quick. Very, very quick tour, man. It started in Liverpool on November 23rd, and it ended in Glasgow on December 17th, not counting the Campuchia show, which ended up being...
Yeah, 10 days later, like... 10 days, 12 days.
Yeah, on the 29th, which ended up being Wings' final performance ever.
Yeah, that sucks. So, really no news to talk about right now. We're still enjoying the lyrics book like we talked about. That was a lot of fun talking about that last week. So, keep the video going and please enjoy the interview here we've got with LJ. And we're back. And as you can see, we have a very special guest, Andy. We're not going to waste any time. We're just going to jump right into this interview because, anytime we have this gentleman with us, it's just, it's an honor. He's really been like one of the few members of Wings that is really, been gracious with his time on this podcast. So I'm sure a lot of us are really appreciative of LJ for taking the time out of his schedule and joining us. And as we know, he's an ex-member of Wings. He's a Grammy Award winner. He played the Bond theme. I mean, he played the banjo for Kermit. LJ, Lawrence, it's great to see you back. Thanks for hopping back on. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Great. So we wanted to talk a little bit about the 79 UK tour because this month marks the anniversary of the start of the tour.
Oh yeah,
started in November. I believe it was 20th, maybe,
23rd. Or 23rd. 23rd. I don't remember.
Yeah, the 23rd.
It's so long ago. Yeah. and the 23rd in Liverpool actually was the opening show.
Yeah, that's right. So, but before we talk about that, can you just talk about your experience of playing live and touring? If you had any experience prior to that 79 tour.
I had some experience, but not in that context. I mean, I had been gigging, since I was 13, but a lot of what I did was either kind of private function type things, especially when I was in college, playing with the National Youth Jazz Orchestra, where we would do concerts in theaters and often with a guest, jazz singer with us. So I was not unaccustomed to being in a theatrical situation, but I was, because my ambition had always been to be a studio musician,
right.
It wasn't my primary kind of goal. There was a period not long before I joined Wings when I played Pete Brown, who was the lyricist for Cream, had a band called Back to the Future. I think it was called that. Oh, no, something like that. I forget the name of it, but I played with them for a little while. And I also played with a band called Landscape, which was a kind of a fusion band. Eventually, in the 80s, they actually had kind of a minor hit with a song called My Name is Norman Bates. But after I had left, they never replaced the guitar chair. But even then, I mean, that was, playing jazz clubs, which were really kind of more the kind of like, you know, like the 100 Club on Oxford Street, which are basically kind of like bars with stages, you know, pubs.
Okay.
Stages. So but certainly, I mean, getting up on stage with a Beatle was a new experience for me.
was it known going in once you joined
back to the front, that's what it was called.
Okay. What was it known as when you joined the band, when you became a member, that it was expected that they were going to a tour at some point?
Oh yeah, I mean, there was no question that there was going to be some kind of live performance. But you remember, I had been in the band for well over a year before we actually went out and did a tour.
Because
we spent a great deal of time working on the Back to the Egg album.
Right.
And the scale of the tour was much different than the previous world tour of 75, 76, in that it was much more scaled down. You were playing theaters and not big stadiums like he had done in America. Right. So,
well, I mean, we played Wembley Arena, for example. We did, I think, 3-4 nights. I forget how many. I mean, we played a lot of shows around London in that tour. We played Lewisham Odeon. We played Wembley. We played the Rainbow. And then with Kampuchea, we played what was then the Hammersmith Odeon.
But
it was not conceived as that kind of like large-scale tour. Paul wanted to do theaters. He wanted to, you know, he always liked playing in smaller venues and still does. I mean, one of the last times I saw him perform was at Amoeba Records in Hollywood, where it was in a record store. I mean,
there for that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Me and Dennis Iwell, we were both there for that.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yeah. When was it known right about that they were going to tour in 79? Was Back to the Egg already recorded at that point in time?
Well, Back to the Egg had been released. That was released in June.
June.
Right.
And then Steve Holly and I went over to Europe for a week to do promotion. You know, we were the new guys.
Mm-hmm.
We got kind of deputized as being, you know, the promo guys too. Because, Paul and Linda just didn't feel like doing that.
Right.
And, you know, we were the new guys, so, you know, we could kind of assume that role. And so we went to, I think, Germany and Spain and Belgium, I forget where else, but Holland, I think, too. And then shortly thereafter, Steve and I went to New York to do promotion there.
Mm-hmm.
But this was, you know, and the videos had been filmed, but those didn't get released until later in the year, too.
Right. I mean,
there was no urgency in the way that the promotion had been structured. Other than the fact that they put us out there and you guys go and represent the band, you know. So which we did. And a fun time of it we had. Got into New York, we got into the Daily News or something. We had our pictures in the paper. You know, it was cool.
One of the nice things I've seen is with the opening tour is that you saw the Wings Over Merseyside. I think it was the local Liverpool Echo paper did a nice spread when you guys played in Liverpool. I don't know if you've seen that, but that's...
No, I have seen that. And, you know, we were there. I mean, we did... I forget how many nights we played there, but we did, you know, the very first concert we did was for all the school kids from the Liverpool Institute. We started rehearsal somewhere in September.
Okay.
Because I was still working on my Standard Time record. So there were a few days where I'd been like in Air Studios all night mixing and then got like an hour's sleep and then went off down to wherever it was we were rehearsing on the South Coast. I think Eastbourne or somewhere. Anything that was a short drive from Peasmarsh. Because Paul and Linda had moved down there really in that time period. You know, and I think that part of the reason that touring was not being kind of broached on a broad level was because they didn't want to have to take the kids out of school. Mm. It got kind of settled. And I think Linda was getting a bit tired of the whole kind of gallivanting around the world business.
Gotcha.
But a UK tour, you know, where they took the kids with them and that was reasonable.
Right. Was the Japan tour dates booked around the same time as the UK tour dates as well?
Because while we were rehearsing, there's a video of us where we were rehearsing in this tiny little house, like a cottage, somewhere very close to Peasmarsh. And I remember because when we were done, we had to walk back to Paul and Linda's house in the dark with Paul with a flashlight, kind of like the scoutmaster leading his scout troop. Woods. I mean, it was, and this would have been, I think, probably October or something of that year. So, I don't remember how long we rehearsed in this particular place. It wasn't very long, but, and then, you know, a lot of choices were made on the basis of Paul and Linda not having to travel very far, including when we were recording at Lim Castle. Which was not that far from, from Peasmarsh. I mean, it was all in that kind of south coast of England area.
Gotcha. Now, the shows that ended up being for, like we talked about, for the Kampuchea shows, I mean, were those also booked at the same time too? I mean, and did you know it was going to be that?
That was an evolving thing. But just to recap, because I didn't quite finish the thought. Okay. While we were in this cottage, we filmed this video that was a kind of a little promotion for the Japanese tour. So it clearly had been set up by then. And also, I mean, we had to apply for work permits. And in the process of applying for work permits, they weren't aware of the fact that on my birth certificate and on my passport, because my given name when I was born was Ivor Lawrence Juber. That Lawrence was my middle name, much in the same way as James Paul McCartney. You know?
Right.
And so I forget whichever show it was, and you can hear it on the live recording when we were doing Every Night, and I'm about to take the solo, and Paul yells, "Take it, Ivor."
Oh, okay.
that's where that came from, was that they started teasing me about the fact that my first name was Ivo.
And they didn't know that.
They didn't know that until it came up on my passport.
One of the best solos from Every Night I've ever heard, by the way.
Well, thanks. I appreciate it.
Yeah, nice job. So then getting to what ended up being the album here. Well, I mean, those tour dates were always included in. You said it was always built up. I mean,
it was a developing thing because they were putting it together while we were, I think, while we were in rehearsal.
Gotcha.
The thing about it was that we'd done the tour and then we had finished shortly before Christmas in Glasgow.
Right.
And then we had Christmas off, and then the following week was the Kampuchea shows.
Right.
And so we lost the kind of the momentum from being in the tour. Plus, the Kampuchea set was, even though that's the only one that's on video, and it was a good show. I mean, my brother was in the audience, and he thought it was one of the best. He'd seen a few of the shows, and he thought it was one of the best that he'd seen. For me at any rate, I just felt like we were just kind of getting warmed up again, because having had the time off. And of course we were, going to be in Japan a few weeks later. So it was kind of like a little bit of a kind of a thing in the middle between the UK tour and the Japanese tour.
Was the Kampuchea set list a truncated version of your normal set? It was
a truncated version for a couple of reasons. One, because we had the orchestra ensemble for the finale, so Let It Be was normally part of the wing set, part of our full show, and we also we had to cut it down just because it wasn't a full 2-hour show at that point, because there were Elvis Costello was on the bill, then we had this orchestra finale. But the cool thing for me was that because we had been playing Let It Be throughout the tour, and of the songs we did the orchestra theme, we did Lucille, and we did Let It Be. On Let It Be, when the solo came around, I kind of looked around and realized nobody else was going to step forward. And I was used to doing it, so I just, I launched into the solo. And then, you know, about 8 bars from the end, I smell brandy fumes, and there's Pete Townsend kind of leering over my shoulder. But it was quite a moment for me, just as a musician, to be on stage with Paul McCartney and this host of rock luminaries behind me, playing Let It Be, playing a Beatle tune. It was a very memorable moment.
Right. Let's switch to set list here and talk about, you know, picking set lists. I know he started embracing Beatles songs for the 75-76 tour. You know, what were your thoughts on the set list? Did you get to partake in choosing songs for the set list?
I don't recall much. I mean, Paul was pretty much kind of calling the shots with the set list. I do know, you know, we opened with Got to Get You Into My Life.
Right.
And I think that part of the reason for that was because Earth, Wind & Fire had a hit with it on their version. Mm. In fact, the very last lick, the very last riff that we played was kind of a tip of the hat to the Earth, Wind & Fire version. And, you know, opening a Wing show with a Beatles song was, I think, kind of a bold move.
Yes.
Given the fact that we did really didn't do that many Beatles songs in the set. I mean, we did Fool on the Hill, we did Let It Be, Paul did Yesterday. I don't know, there was another one. I mean, you know, the tone of the set was really intended, I think, to be supportive of Back to the Egg.
Right. You know,
to recognize the fact that this was a new incarnation of the band, that it was a different sound and a more rock-oriented sound than, you know, we didn't do the pop hits. We didn't do Listen to What the Man Said. We didn't do Let Him In, silly love songs. We did, of course, we did do Mull of Kintyre, but, you know, you could not do Mull of Kintyre at that point because that song had been so massive throughout Europe. But, you know, we added, for example, for Japan, we added Another Day because that had been a big hit there. We also added Let Him In and Live and Let Die were on the Japanese set list. I forget what was being dropped in order to accommodate those. But, you know, there was a strong Back to the Egg focus, you know, doing Spin It On, doing Getting Closer.
Five songs from the LP were in the set.
Yeah. But there was also stuff from McCartney. I mean, we did Hot as Sun.
Right.
So yes. The Paul could play a little lead guitar. We also did Cook of the House, that Linda would have a feature. And I think that, and of course there was, you know, there was the Maybe I'm Amazed Every Night stuff, but we didn't do My Love. Again, another kind of like pop ballad.
Mm.
I think maybe Let It Be kind of took the place of what that would have been in terms of having kind of a big show-stopping ballad in the set. But I think that we had rehearsed with a little luck, but it just didn't fit, you know, because really, I mean, this incarnation of Wings was a bit of a rock band, you know. And there was always this dichotomy in Wings between Wings as a pop group and Wings as a rock band. And I mean, that stems from the Beatles, but the Beatles kind of musical spectrum was so vast that, you know, not just in terms of the chronology where they started, you know, with 62, 63, where the style of pop was quite different from what pop music became 5 years later, for example. But I think that our Wings kind of leaned more towards the rock end of the spectrum.
Yeah. In fact, the repertoire
really kind of reflected that.
Yeah, there is that video version that you referenced of you guys rehearsing in the room, and you did make a good fist of With a Little Luck, but it's a little more rockier.
Yeah, and it just didn't work that way.
No.
I mean, that With a Little Luck was a great pop record, but it didn't really fit. It didn't fit. And this really continued on into when we were rehearsing the Tug of War material, and we were doing it in a rehearsal hall, again, somewhere kind of close to where Paul and Linda lived, that we were doing the kinds of songs like, you know, Average Person and stuff that again, wasn't really rock oriented, that would have been, in my, for my mind, more appropriately worked out in the studio, where you could really finesse parts and the acoustic end of things would be more prominent. And whereas the rock stuff actually kind of, you know, when we were fooling around with rock and roll tunes at that point, you know, that all went very, very easily in that kind of environment. But, you know, it was just, and of course, once George Martin got involved, it all kind of, the whole perspective changed. But I do think that, you know, we had, Coming Up was a new song.
And well, Paul, we were going to ask you about that. I mean, was that presented while rehearsing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I remember Paul showing me the guitar riff. But, you know, for example, I mean, we did Goodnight Tonight in the set, which had been a big hit. We didn't do Daytime Nighttime Suffering, which is one of the coolest songs of the decade that he had written. I mean, that's kind of the bookend to Another Day, really. And, you know, but that was, you know, a complicated piece of music. And, again, we were just, the energy was a little bit more rock than it was that kind of, like, almost, you know, the kind of mini symphony idea that the, you know, that a really finely wrought pop single would be. And I think that Daytime Nighttime Suffering kind of fits into that area with all of little, kind of the little vocal breakdown and just the tone of it, the different colors of it. But, you know, of course, there was the stamp, the old, you know, stalwart songs like, you know, Go Now, of course, for Denny. And, you know, and we did Again and Again and Again, which was a backstage. We did No Words. But we didn't do, I mean, other than No Words and Band on the Run, we didn't do anything else from that album. We didn't do Jet. You know, we didn't do Mrs. Vanderbilt or any of that stuff.
That's surprising.
But you did I've Had Enough from London Town. Interesting.
We did do that. We had done the video of that
when
we first went up to Scotland in May of 79. But again, it was kind of a rockier song. But what else was there from London Town?
Not much.
Name and address, what was the question here? So we know that Henry McCullough was not really the biggest fan of, you know, playing the same thing every night. I mean, was that okay for you to, and did Paul insist on playing the same solo, I mean, the same way, to be true to the studio, if you will?
Well, I think that, I mean, there's a delicate balance there because, you know, when there is a familiar solo, I mean, for example, when I do an instrumental version of My Love when I'm doing, you know, a band concert, and I functionally reproduce Henry's solo. And when I do Junior's Farm, I functionally reproduce Jimmy's solo, because of both of those songs I do as kind of an homage to my predecessors in the band. I think that, you know, Paul likes it when solos are short. You know, Wings in the studio and in rehearsal were a jam band. But we weren't on stage. In fact, when I do my band, I call my band Airfoil, which is a kind of a wing. but when I do stuff like that, I kind of lean into the jam end of it. So when we do Getting Closer, for example, I extend it, you know, extend the ending of it, put a solo into Arrow Through Me where there was no guitar solo on the record. But it's just things that just kind of, if we had gone that extra step into that. But Paul doesn't function that way. I think in recent years there was a loosening up of how, you know, extending solos a bit more liberal in the way that, but at that period, I mean, you pretty much, it needed to be at least quasi like the record, but I took liberties. I mean, my Let It Be solo is not any of George's Let It Be solos. And even if I'm playing like on Every Night, even if I'm playing, you know, the kind of melody, I'll kind of play around it a little bit. Mm. But that's always been my thing, was to try and put, even when I was playing something that was a reproduction of something else, just to put my stamp on it.
Gotcha. You
know?
Okay.
But again, that's, you know, that's kind of more of the rock angle on things, in terms of, I came up as a lead guitarist, I came up as an improviser.
Mm.
Because my inspirations were Hendrix and Jeff Beck and Eric Clapton and Jimmy Page, and players that, you know, they might have structured solos in the studio but didn't play them exactly the same way live.
Live, right.
Gotcha.
And you can hear that on your solos, on like on Let It Be, on Every Night. It's very evident, and that's makes
yeah, it's just where I live, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Where were you guys introduced to Earl Oaken, and how did he become part of the tour?
Earl Oaken, I think Denny and Steve knew him. As it turned out, I didn't know at the time, but he was a neighbor of mine in Portobello Road in London. But I think, you know, they didn't want another band opening, and Earl was this such an eccentric character that he was in such a different space from Wings that it wasn't like a competitive situation. It was really just, you know, rather than have a stand-up comedian warm up the crowd, you have this guy that has, you know, wears spats and bowler hats and sings kind of old time songs, but then, you know, like cracks, you know, a joke, and then has some kind of humor in the songs too. Lovely guy and very easygoing. And I remember when we first, the hotel in Liverpool, they had his name spelled wrong, and they were looking for Mr. Earl Oink.
Oops. Yeah. You know, Roby the Robot, what can you say about that?
It was just a gag. I mean, on Good Night Tonight, there's a, you know, one of the early drum machines was part of the rhythm track on that, and so we had that, you know, with the live performance, and so the robot was there really just as a gag for Paul to kick it and, you know, get the rhythm box started.
Okay.
It's just a little visual thing. I mean, I don't know whose idea it was.
Yeah, okay. Just a little bit of a gag, right?
Yeah. Where is he now?
Probably.
Oh, no, actually, now he's working for Facebook.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, facial recognition and the whole nine.
Very right. Good. Your brother, you mentioned your brother earlier. I mean, he showed up to a lot of shows. He took a lot of photographs, right?
He took a bunch of photos, and in my Guitar with Wings book, there's there you go. The shots of the band live, I think were all, mostly from him. The, you know, the photos, my photos in there were all mostly studio stuff,
gotcha.
Or on the band bus or whatever. And of course, you know, when I'm on stage, I mean, Linda would take photos on stage.
Sure.
And I've never seen any of her on stage photos, so. There's got to be a whole library of them somewhere.
Right.
But for me, it was, you know, I just, when I joined the band, I got a decent camera so I could be kind of a fly on the wall and document things. But Graham, my brother, did, you know, he took a bunch of pictures and went through them and picked the ones that kind of fit the, you know, the format of the book. And he's a rather good photographer. He had a background in graphic design, so that, you know, and he loved coming to the shows. So I got him a photo. I forget which show it was. I got him a photo pass for, which he was thrilled.
Oh, cool!
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And I'm just moving on. I must ask, one of the probably biggest missteps, I think, unfortunately, was that none of the shows were ever fully recorded in film. Throughout the whole,
well, they were fully recorded. The Glasgow show was fully recorded,
audio, but on film.
Well,
to see
right, well, only the Campuchia one.
Oh,
and it wasn't so much a misstep. I think it was just not really on the agenda at that point. You know, we were going to be going to Japan. You know, this was a new band. It was a lot of new repertoire. How much benefit there would have been from spending the money on and the disruption of, you know, with Glasgow, that we did two nights, so they recorded the second night, so the last night of the tour got recorded,
right?
One thing that you don't get with Glasgow is that when we were doing Mull of Kintyre throughout the tour, the above the stage where the horn section were, there was we'd do Mull of Kintyre, and you would see the solitary bagpipe player. But the second night in Glasgow, the Campbelltown Pipe Band, who had played on the record, walked through the audience and came on stage.
Right. Yeah. Very cool.
It must have been incredible to see, because there are some amateur shot footage of you guys playing. I think in Good Night Tonight, there's a video on YouTube. You know, there's some videos.
Haven't seen it.
There's some videos circulating in not great, varying degrees of quality. But you know, they're you guys are just cooking, and it's just a shame that.
I mean, the band was in great shape that night. I think that the version of Good Night Tonight from that show, because you know, there was no time for me to change onto an acoustic guitar, so I did the flamenco style solo on electric.
Right.
I mean. The thing about that song is that, you know, it got kind of tarred as a disco song,
right?
Because Columbia Records put out, you know, this 12-inch disco single, and it certainly in the discotheques in Europe, it was a huge hit that summer. Summer of 79, that was like the number one dance club hit. But you think about the fact that and both of these were in the set, that the last two Wings hits were both dance rock records. Because I consider Good Night Tonight still to be a rock record, but with a dance groove to it. And much is coming up. And whereas Paul's version of Coming Up isn't a rock record, the band's version is.
Right.
So you probably had no clue that he had recorded it for the McCartney 2 record.
Oh, no, we knew. No, we knew.
Oh, you didn't know. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, because we also did Wonderful Christmas Time, which came out of that
same period.
Right. That recording period.
Okay.
And, you know, the story with that was that, you know, we had the Santa Claus came down during Wonderful Christmas Time. They didn't tell me that they were going to have fake snow.
Okay.
So I open my mouth to sing the Choir of Angels bit, and I get a mouthful of this like plastic snow, you know, and all the front rows were just, you know, cracking up over it because it was like just a mouthful of snow. I had no idea that was going to happen.
Right. That's funny.
Yeah.
So November 23rd, opening night. Jitters, goose. I mean, were you nervous? I mean, talk about, you know, the moments leading to that show. I mean, how are you feeling?
Well, I mean, there's always a kind of a nervous energy before you get on stage, you know. But you know, once you start playing, I mean, you get into the show. For me, because I had not been that experienced as a live entertainer. It was all kind of a big adventure, you know. It was because I was just really kind of learning the ropes in terms of being on large stages with that much spotlight. It's one thing when you're in a big band and you're kind of, you know, you get the occasional solo, but when you're in, you know, when I say big, I mean a jazz big band. But when you're in, you know, when you're in Paul McCartney's group, it's a very different kind of focus. I was very much looking forward to continuing it with Japan because we were just really, the band was just really starting to, you know, getting to gel.
Right.
You know, and cook.
Yeah. I mean, that was going to be one of my questions too. I mean, I would imagine like probably halfway through that tour, did you feel like it was early on that you guys were really starting to, you know, get acquainted with each other on stage? I mean, when did you feel like it was really going well?
Well, also, I think, you know, when you think about the environment, we were playing theaters, and the audiences in the south of England are a lot more sedate than the audiences in the north. So the further north we went, the more exciting it got.
It's funny you bring that
and,
up.
When we played in Manchester, the same venue we played in Manchester the night before, I'd gone to see Queen there.
Mm.
So, you know, and that kind of thing gets you fired up because, yeah, I'm going to be on that stage tomorrow night, you know. So it kind of lifts you. But, you know, I think by the time we got to Newcastle, I think that was really, you know, really starting to feel like things were kind of getting, you know, quite hot because there was a very enthusiastic crowd. I think that might have been the concert where the power went out and we ended up jamming on When the Saints Go Marching In for a little bit.
Okay. That would have been the 14th of December. But Andy, you had something you want to say?
Yeah, LJ, I don't know if you had an opportunity to see it recently, some of that Saturday shakeup footage of you guys.
I saw it, yeah.
And it's funny, the interviewer asks you all the same question about the differences between the North and the South. Mm-hmm. And he said it was very evident that the North were going to be a little bit more, just a little bit more, you know, amped up than the audiences in the South.
Oh, yeah.
And that, all that footage, that Saturday shakeup footage is tremendous and worth checking out if you have a chance to see it.
Mm-hmm. No, I have seen it.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you learn much about yourself as a musician throughout that tour? I mean,
I'm always learning stuff about myself as a musician. I mean, that's doesn't stop. You know, I've been playing guitar now for 58 years.
Wow. So
there's always something new to learn, and it just, you know, it's I think the thing I learned most on that tour was really just starting to get a better understanding of the craft of being an entertainer.
Okay, right. Yeah, you know, I would imagine that while you guys are doing that, I mean, you're also feeling more confident as well, perhaps, as the tour is going on.
Well, it's just getting tighter, you know.
Yeah. Gotcha.
I think that everybody, I mean, you know, when you go through multiple gigs, you know, the sound people get things fine-tuned.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really kind of, the more you do it, the better you get.
Gotcha.
The tour is also very notable, LJ, and you know this, is because it's the last time Paul used the full horn section on a concert. Like that.
Until the last tour.
But I mean, for the full show.
Well, yeah, but that was all part. I mean, that was part of the Wings ethos, was that the horns were an adjunct to the band.
Right.
So, you know, when we did Rockestra, the horn section came in. When we beefed up the horns, you know, the horns on Goodnight Tonight, not on Coming Up, we overdubbed, you know, on top of the live horns, we overdubbed it again just to beef it up a bit. So, you know, the horns were kind of peripherally involved, you know, anyway. Although,
gotcha,
not on Back to the Egg, except for
the Rockestra,
except for Rockestra and Arrow Through Me.
And maybe so glad to see you here too, or no?
Maybe.
Yes, because that was all part of the Rockestra session. Yeah.
Right. Talk a little bit about, did you get the chance to kind of meet those guys, Thaddeus Richard and Steve and Howie Casey, and then kind of interact?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we would hang with them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were.
And Howie, I also got to know Howie a bit more when we did the Ringo's Stop and Smell the Roses
album, right,
in France, and Howie was there.
Okay.
For that, too.
Gotcha. How was the travel for you? I mean, I would imagine it was just by bus.
Yeah, we just had a bus. We had a band bus, and we traveled around in that.
Okay.
No flying on private jets.
Right. Not yet, anyway. So the there would have been a U.S. leg then, right?
That had been discussed.
Okay, but not booked.
You know, if we had done a U.S. leg in the summer of 1980, we would have, you know, Wings would have been on tour with a number one single.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of regrettable that it never went there. I do recall when we were in Liverpool and we were at Rembrandt, like Paul's dad's house.
Yep.
And we were having a party after the opening night, I think it was, somewhere around in that time period. And Harvey Goldsmith, the promoter, tour promoter, was there. And the TV was on, and there was some footage of, I think, Jerusalem or somewhere. And I remember him mentioning that there was some request to have Wings play in Israel.
Mm.
But nothing, I never heard anything more about it. It kind of struck me in that particular moment. But the plan was we would do Japan, and I imagine probably would have done some European dates if we were going to do a US tour. But you know, that all got blown out by Paul getting busted in Tokyo.
Right. Yeah, well, I was going to try to avoid that part.
I think that it was just starting to be too much pressure on the family to be trying to balance the band and the family. And of course, once John died, that, you know, Paul didn't tour again, you know, for almost a decade.
Yeah. Correct. Right. Your time with Wings, I mean, were you disappointed that it didn't last a little longer, or your recording, you know, especially with recording, and specifically with album, because you only did but the one album and one single, really,
and a bunch of the cold stuff,
right?
And of course the Rupert collection,
yeah, that right, we did Rupert, right? Yeah.
I think that it's kind of a mixed bag, because I was enjoying the live performance. I was looking forward to Japan and, you know, perhaps beyond. The recording experience, I mean, we spent a fair amount of time doing Back to the Egg.
Right.
We started it in July and didn't really finish it until, what, March or something.
Mm.
There wasn't a lot of pressure to get that done quickly, until there was. You know, it's always the case with that kind of thing. And this was his first, first album for Columbia Records
in the States.
So I think that, I don't know, it would have been great if it had continued. I went into it with the expectation that, having seen Wings go through kind of these 2-3 year incarnations, that it probably wouldn't go beyond that. Mm-hmm. And as things were starting, especially after Japan, I was starting to set my sights on moving to New York.
Okay.
So I could see that, I could see there was going to be an end to it. It was just hard to predict exactly when it would be.
Right. What will be nice, LJ, is eventually, as Paul's archive series continues and Back to the Egg does finally get reissued.
Finally, yeah.
Finally, I think a lot of people will be able to see and reappraise.
There will be a very large hip hip hooray when that happens.
I will, because there's so much content. And that, in that period of your time with the band, so from 78 to 80, there's 81, really. And there's so much.
Yeah, it was 81. Yeah.
81. There's so much that went on in that period that could really encompass a really lavish package to represent your period with the band.
Well, you could certainly have, you could have the Back to the Egg album plus the few outtakes there were from those sessions. Cage, most notably. There's some confusion. People seem to think that Weep for Love was recorded during the Back to the Egg sessions, but it wasn't.
Okay.
That's Dennis Chum. We did that when we were at Lim Castle doing the videos after the album was complete. That was one of the songs we recorded, because they had a mobile truck there, and we were still doing a little bit of recording.
Okay.
So the only outtakes I know of, apart from alternate takes, alternate mixes of things, would be Cage, and there's my tune Maisie.
Right.
Which I think once we had recorded it, Paul just forgot about it, and it never kind of really was a contender for the album. But other than that, you've got the Kampuchea set, because that album is never going to come out, because it was hard enough to get it out in the first place.
Right.
Because everybody was on a different record label. Here you have a whole side of Wings on Atlantic Records.
Which,
when Paul's deal was with Columbia,
which, truth be told, might be a sticking point why Back to the Egg archive has maybe been a little delayed to get that material.
That shouldn't make a difference. I think that there wouldn't be the live stuff. More likely it would be The Last Flight.
Right, this one.
Stuff would be part of that package, along with the video of Kampuchea. Not you know, not a standalone audio.
Gotcha.
And then perhaps, I mean, you know, obviously you've got Good Night Tonight, you've got Daytime Nighttime Suffering. There were some of the tunes that we worked on the very first session we did. Same time next year.
Right.
And the very last thing we did before I jumped ship and moved to New York was Same Time Next Year. They did a remix of it, which wasn't the same remix that came out on the Put It There single.
Different.
Right. Different remix. I mean, not very much. But.
No, but then you've also got a slew of, you all made a ton of music videos for the album too.
Well, yeah, there's videos too, yeah.
So, you know, there's all that supplemental material crammed into this.
Right. Yeah. And that should all be in one place with, you know, a glossy booklet and, you know,
it would be nice.
You know, I mean, I covered kind of my end of it when I did my Guitar with Wings book because I had the photo and I had the narrative that went along with it. But my narrative is very different from Steve's or from Dennis because everybody's perspective was different. People remember things different.
Right. Well, a couple of my favorite photos of yours is in the McCartney 2 archives set, actually. And I don't know if you remember these or not.
No, I remember that. Yeah.
But it turned out to look like my right hand from the album.
My right hand fingernails there. You know, in those days, I was still in the kind of classical guitar mode with long right hand fingernails.
Fingernails. Gotcha.
I don't use them.
Just promotional photos for something in particular?
It was just a photo session. I don't, you know, we did a whole, we were doing photo sessions all the time. It was always photographers around.
Got you.
Yeah. Not just Linda, but you know.
Yeah. Did you have a hard time slicking your hair back to do the Good Night Tonight video? Or?
No, that wasn't hard, especially when you have somebody who knows what they're doing to
do it. You talk about Linda very heavily in your book as an inspiration as a photographer. Are you still taking lots of photos these days?
On and off. I'm just, you know, it's like I have an Instagram account, but I rarely post to it.
Right.
You know, a lot of the photos more recently have been kind of a grandkids.
Right.
But I do. I mean, I have a whole, we have a cabin up in the mountains, and I've been doing a whole series of sunsets that at some point I need to just go through. My problem these days is I just don't have a lot of free time.
Right.
You know, I was doing, for during the lockdowns, I was doing Facebook Live to begin with, three times a week. And that took up a lot of time. In fact, I'm in the process of releasing a series of EPs as Bandcamp exclusives. There's four track EPs that are all culled from those Facebook Live sessions. I'm calling it a virtually live album.
So they're not going to be physical EPs, or they're just going to be?
No, they're not physical EPs. There will be a limited run of physical CDs. As much as people buy CDs anymore. I mean, it's really, you know, we live in the streaming universe and you know, even downloads.
Right. And those will be available on your website.
No, the EPs are Bandcamp exclusives.
Okay.
So, you know, you have to go to follow me on bandcamp.com. And like next Friday, I don't know when you're going to broadcast this, but next Friday the 12th, I'm doing a concert on Bandcamp. And if you buy a ticket to the concert, you get to download the EP for free.
Oh, very cool.
But in the new year, the whole thing will come out as an album. And then there'll be a limited run of CDs. Probably, you know, like 250 signed and numbered or something.
Is there any plans for a tour or anything like that in the near future? Getting out into different states or anything like that?
I mean, up until COVID, I was always touring. You know, I don't do kind of like the designated kind of, you know, 24-city tour kind of thing. It's much more whatever my agent comes up with. But right now, my gigs are a local L.A. area stuff.
Okay.
And then in Let me think. Well, I'm going to be. I'm signed up to do the Beatle Fest, the Fest for Beatle fans in, in New Jersey.
Oh,
yeah. Hopefully, we'll see you there.
Hopefully, this will be hopefully the third, you know, third time.
Third time.
I did Abbey Road on the River over Labor Day weekend in Louisville. That was when I played with Peter Asher's band and then used them to back me up for my electric set. I know some of those same musicians like Jeff Allen Ross and Bill Sinkley, who play with Peter, were doing a Beatles show at the Grammy Museum on November 20th. As far as the national touring goes, I have a date. I have a date in March in Easton, Pennsylvania, with Steve Miller and Martin Stewart, which will be a fun show. And that's the weekend before the Beatle Fest. And then, other than that, it all depends. I mean, my agent's just starting to get stuff coming in now.
Okay. You know,
the East Coast opened up a lot quicker than the West Coast did.
Right.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Because, wow. I mean, even some of our local club venues are still not open.
Wow.
We're just starting to open up, you know. But here, you've got to be vaccinated and, you know.
Right.
Oh, of course.
You've got to wear masks and stuff. But, I have started. I mean, like, I did 2 weeks ago, I did my first solo indoor club concert. I did some festivals over the summer that were outdoors, but that was my first indoor one.
Right.
So it's a process, but I've been getting into doing a lot more studio work. And I have to admit that I'm not as enamored of travel as I used to be.
That's understandable. You know, I'm a chef and I do a lot of concerts. I'm a tour caterer. So I get to hear everybody's stories about, you know, how this whole COVID thing has affected their life and, you know, the travel, you know, and the being vaccinated and all that stuff. So it's been really interesting to hear, you know, all the production managers and the bands and all that stuff and their stories, you know. So
you see how many artists recently have canceled shows because they tested positive for COVID.
Yes. Right here. The band I saw a couple of months ago, Kiss, they had to cancel as well.
Well, yeah, because the roadie, one of the guitar techs, died.
Died. Yep, exactly. Yeah.
So, you know, it's not, these are not normal times. Right. But happily, you know, I have a studio here. So people send me stuff to do. I've been working out of a studio in the LA area. There's a producer named Michael Blue, who did Colby Calais records, and I've been doing a bunch of studio things with him. I've been recording with a good friend of mine, Richard T-Bear, who's on Quarto Valley Records. We just did a Christmas record, a Christmas single together. There's just, you know, there's stuff going on. So I'm staying busy, and I am trying to carve out some time to write some new acoustic guitar stuff.
Oh, great!
So, that's a process, and then, but also, I mean, I've got all these, you know, I've got this 16-track album that of these EPs, and everything. I have a video on everything, but I have to wait for the album to come out so that we can put the videos up on YouTube, because I can't, if I put it up myself right now, there's no way of monetizing it.
No.
Right.
But when the album is out, then it gets monetized through my record distributors.
Then you can get it through that. Right.
There's, there's business to be done.
Absolutely.
Right. Understood. Cool.
But yeah, what I found really interesting is how much the different streaming services appeal to different audiences. It's like Apple Music, my number one this last week was, what was it? It was Stand By Me. No, Yesterday. It was Yesterday. It's usually Yesterday, Stand By Me, or While My Guitar Gently Weeps.
Okay.
And then all my video game stuff, because I worked on the score for Diablo 3.
Yeah, Apple 3, right?
That stuff gets a lot of play. And on Spotify, that usually is the kind of, you know, the stuff that gets the most play. But on Pandora, my old business stuff gets all the play. So heading into streaming season there.
Yes.
And then, but Bandcamp, you know, I've really been kind of looking to Bandcamp as being a very artist-friendly kind of home base. Because Facebook is fine for community, but it's not a great place to do business.
Okay.
Whereas with Bandcamp, I can charge $10 for a concert, and people can download the EP, you know, for ten, you know, within that. And the stuff stays up there for 48 hours, and then it's gone. Whereas on Facebook, unless you go in and, you know, vacuum it out, it stays on there forever. And I'm, you know, I'm happy that I've got this lovely community on Facebook, but it's not. In and of itself, a way of doing business.
No. Gotcha.
The fact is that I'm in the music business.
Right.
Right. Oh, yeah. You're not in the friend-making business. You're in the music business.
Exactly.
Well, you have to balance.
Yeah, I understand.
Life and commerce, you know.
Right. I understand. I hear you. Well, we really appreciate you telling us about, talking to us about your memories of that tour, and you know, whatever you got, you know, coming out, we'll make sure we help promote it as well. So, you know, we'll put your website down below and the link so people know to take it out. And also, don't forget that his book, Guitar with Wings, is still available on the website.
Lovely Christmas present.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great book. A lot of great photos, and a lot of your CDs are still available on your website.
Yeah, CDs are still available. I mean, but literally, you know, people just don't, unless it's at a concert, people don't buy CDs.
Right.
Like they used to.
Yeah.
And I did vinyl. I did my Under an Indigo Sky album about 7-8 years ago. Came out as a limited edition vinyl for Record Store Day. And, you know, that's a nice way to sell through that stuff. But right now, you know, the manufacturing on vinyl is so backed up that it's 6 months.
6 months to a year, yeah. It's amazing.
Well, right. You know, the raw material's not there.
Right, no. Right. Matter of fact, I think Ringo's last EP, he put the CD out, but the vinyl is coming out, like, months after.
But didn't he do a cassette, too?
Yes, he did a cassette as well.
Yeah. My cassette player doesn't work anymore. That's the trouble. I guess he's still got boxes of cassettes and DAT tapes and two-inch recording tape and everything else. But, you know, we live in a digital world.
That's right.
And there are some of my stuff's available as high-res digital.
Right. Okay.
You know, which is, I mean, it's a nicer way to listen, especially when you know, if I go into Capitol, as I, you know, I did on a few albums, going to Capitol and have Al Schmidt mix it or record it. And, you know, it's just a different dimension, sonic dimension, you know, the world of digital recording, when you start to get into higher sample rates, you know, it's when you really start to appreciate it.
The quality of
what recording truly is.
Right? Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. Andy, anything else you want to add before we sign off?
No, just thanks again, LJ. It was always a pleasure talking to you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yep, and we'll, you know, we'll get this up in probably about a week and a half or so.
Lovely. And where are you guys based?
I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. So if you ever come back to the meme, I'll make sure to get there and, you know,
and, Andy, I'm in New Jersey, so I'll see you at the fest.
Which exit?
On the exit 145. Uh-huh. So you know that, okay?
We're doing in passing the Grammy. We're doing this show at the Grammy Museum on the 20th of November, which is the Beatles 62-66, the Red Album.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Albert Lee's doing it. Prescott Niles from the Knack is doing it. Ron Dante from the Archers is doing it, right. And Maria Muldaur just signed on to do it too.
So
those artists will also get to do some of their own like we'll do Midnight at the Oasis It'll be a cool show, you know, and stuff like that. Local things are just so much fun to do, where I don't have to get on a plane. I right. Just go right there. From my house to the Grammy Museum is like 13 and a half miles.
Wow. Convenient. Very convenient.
Yeah, yeah. I could almost walk it if I didn't have to schlep so many guitars. All right, then. Take it easy.
Well, thank you very much, LJ. Listen, you know, you've, like I said, you've really, gracious with your time and all these podcasts, and I'm sure all of us really appreciate it. And thank you for your time, and peace out, and hopefully we can talk to you again in the future sometime.
All right. Look forward to
thank
it.
You.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
Okay, then we're back. So, Andy, that's LJ again.
Always a gentleman. He's always gracious with his time and answered all of our questions great. And, his memory is, he's very sharp, and he knows the dates of when he did things with Paul, recorded the sessions. And, it was just a pleasure talking to him again. And as we brought up in the episode with him, I think he's really eager to see an archive issue of the Back to the X stuff, too. You know he wants that.
Oh, I hope so. Absolutely. And I'm sure he'll partake in that too. If they ask him, so really looking forward to that, as is everybody else out there. All the McCartney fans are looking forward to that. But yeah, it was really cool just to get his experience and his thoughts on that, like you said, that really quick tour, unfortunately the last one.
It was all that final version of Wings. It's all they had was that short UK tour, obviously being cut short with Japan. And really interesting to hear him say how US was kicked around for the summer of 1980. But obviously it was just, never going to happen. But what if, man?
Yeah. And like you said, too, it would have been really interesting, too, because, they would have been on tour with a number one with Coming Up. And, I wonder, does McCartney 2 album still come out?
I don't think so. I don't think it would have. I don't think it would have come out then. I really don't. That album came out in May of 80, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
May of 80, so maybe he delays it a little bit, Who knows? January 1980, a whole monkey wrench gets thrown into the whole thing. So,
yes, and that was a big monkey wrench anyways. But, so a lot of fun with LJ. Thanks again. And please check out his website. As we showed in the interview, he's got the Guitar with Wings. Really good book. A lot of great photos. A lot of great memories with his time with Wings. So go to his website and you can check that out there.
And until the archive edition comes out, go out and try to find this sucker somewhere, because this is the best audio source of that final tour with Wings, the show in Glasgow on the 17th of December. Can't tell you where to get it, but do your work, people.
Just live, right, Andy?
Just live. Yep.
Okay.
That is just the live 2 discs of the and soundboard recording as well.
It's of the Campuchia show, right?
Right, that's this also has Campuchia on it as well.
Okay,
it includes Campuchia because the Campuchia, as he told us, was a shortened version of the set.
Set list.
Yeah, but you get that if you find the Last Flight CD, the Campuchia stuff is on there as well. Is Campuchia ever get a CD release, Tom? Do you know?
No. It's one of the few projects of his that hasn't gotten a CD release.
Right. So
if it did, it might be bootlegged. I don't know. So
just a great tour to hear some hidden gems that we never heard live before. No Words, I've Had Enough.
Right.
Back to the Egg material. This was the only time this material was ever going to get played live. So it's just a nice kind of capsule of time. And as LJ mentioned, there wasn't the mega hits were not on here, aside from Big on the Run and Mulligan Tire. No Jet, no Silly Love Songs, no Let 'Em In, no Live and Let Die, no My Love. Nothing. None of them were in this set list. So it's
exactly.
It's a very unique set list. Specifically,
so
buried in time.
Right. Exactly. You mentioned, Old Siam Sir is there. Maybe I'm Amazed, Hot as Sun, Every Night. I'd probably be really happy with that set list.
Great.
To be honest with you.
Great.
Yeah.
Set list. Good Night Tonight Live. Good Night Tonight Live. They smoke it on that. They just kill it on that. Getting Closer, opening the show with Got to Get You Into My Life with the horns. Everything, even everything about it. 20 Flight Rock, the first time Paul played 20 Flight Rock in a live set. Oh, actually, no, that's wrong. I think he played it on an early Wings tour. But I mean, in this quality, it's just amazing. So come on there, Scott Roger. Reach out to us. We'll help you.
Very good. Very good. Andy, anything else you want to mention before we sign off, buddy?
No, just a prolific period here for Two Legs. A lot of activity lately on our channel with live videos on boxing, the lyrics books, which we did. We wrapped up our top 101 countdown of Macca songs. So our channel has been very, very big and active lately. We finally hit over 800 subscribers. Thank you, everybody, to that. And just keep on subbing, because the content will keep on coming, as Cousin Bruce used to say.
Yeah, it'll keep on coming, because there's really no shortage of material to talk about when it comes to McCartney. I was just chatting the other day with somebody, and they were like, any slowing down yet? I'm like, no.
How about us?
I've got the next 2 months mapped out already.
Oh, they were asking you about our show?
Yeah.
No, man. Yeah. Pedal to the metal. Full throttle. Get out of the way.
Full throttle. Helen Wheels is on charge, man. We're going.
Well, this is it. This is us, man. This is what we do.
Yep. Yep, that's right. So, but Andy, always great to hang out with you, buddy, and talk about our favorite musician of all time. So, always. But yeah, you can check us out on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Two Legs Podcast. Email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. There's the website, twolegspodcast.com, where you can check us out there, and you can find all the videos there. Or you can just go to YouTube and type in Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. Check us out and please subscribe. Like Andy said, we're over the 800 subs now, and forging on and getting closer to that goal of 1,000. And really hope we can get there by some point next year. That'd be great. And I'm sure we'll probably do some kind of 1,000 subscriber contest as well once mm-hmm. we get there. And we just gave away the lyrics book to a lucky winner. And, I'm sure we'll do something like that as well once we get to 1,000. So anyways, everybody out there, we really appreciate you guys checking out the show. All the longtime fans that have been listening to us for a long time, we really appreciate you. A lot of the newcomers, let us know who you are. Email us, like I said, twolegspodcast@gmail.com. And just say hi and just let us know that you're listening.
And, say hi.
Yeah, say hi. There you go. But anyways, everybody out there, thanks again. Have a great day and a beautiful night, and we'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan Seymour.